This is Congressman Steve Womack with comment from the Capitol. I file this report on Friday, October 3rd, day three of the government shutdown. And I'm joined by my dear friend and Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mike Johnson. Mr. Speaker, the current situation is in the hands of leadership, and specifically, Senate leadership. And perhaps nothing you have faced so far in the almost 2 years that you've been the Speaker of the House has the collective leadership of the Congress been so challenged than this moment. So here we are on day three. Give us a quick status report on how negotiations are going.
I will, but let me say first, I'm so intimidated by the great radio voice that is interviewing me today. I appreciate you, my friend, and I know you've got such a great group of constituents who tune into this, and I want to give them an accurate report. We just did a big press conference out here, Leader Thune and I, in front of about 200 media outlets and cameras, and we explained where things stand. They've asked us many times, why aren't Republicans negotiating with Democrats? Well, because we don't really have much to negotiate. As you know, we sent over a clean, very simple, very small, 24-page continuing resolution to keep the government open. Why? So that leaders like you can continue the appropriations process. You've been working really hard. Mr. Womack is one of the great champions of the way that this is supposed to work. Regular order, as we say, we aspire to, because that's the best way to be a good steward of taxpayer dollars. But the appropriations process hasn't worked like that in a long time. And we're trying to force that muscle memory back. Thank you for being one of the stalwarts, pushing the Congress to do its work. We've made some real achievements because you guys rolled your sleeves up. You got 12 separate appropriations bills through committee, three off the floor. For the first time in years, the Senate passed three bills. What an achievement. And when the bills don't match up exactly, now we've gone to the next stage, which is a conference committee. We have to allow more time for that to play out, and that is very simply what we've asked. So we didn't load our CR up with partisan priorities or poison pills or gimmicks. So I don't, therefore, have anything to bring to the table and say, oh, gee, guys, we'll pull back these Republican priorities. Would you vote for it now? They're voting to extend what you and I lament, Biden-era policies and spending that they've already supported 13 times during the Biden administration, and now they're playing politics with it. Yeah.
I was asked by one of my local reporters how we got into this mess, and I told him, I said, well, there's a short answer to it, and then there's a longer, more technical answer to it. The short answer is we sent a CR, as you just indicated, over to them for 7 weeks so we can continue working, and they're not taking it. The longer answer is what I often refer to as a broken budget process that has plagued the Congress ever since I came here 15 years ago. And, you know, the way it's supposed to work is we do budgets, we kick out top-line numbers, appropriators go to work and match those numbers to the appropriations of the discretionary budget. So that's the end goal here, is to get back to regular order, is it not?
It is. I mean, this is all written in the law, black-letter law. The 1974 Budget Control Act has very specific dates and times and prescribed processes on how that's supposed to work. But everybody just ignores that. And you and I have talked about this a lot offline and how frustrating that is, because the reason the law is put that way, the reason you do a budget and then you do this appropriate process and you do all the hard work, is because it's the only way to be a good steward of precious resources of taxpayers. And when everything is crammed to the end of the year and put into these giant omnibus spending packages that are negotiated by four people in a back room, it's no way to run a railroad. And it's part of the reason, you and I know, that the country finds itself in this $37 trillion plus debt hole and this terrible trajectory we're on. And we are dead set and determined to push it back the way it's supposed to be done. But it's like pushing a boulder up a hill. It's like, you know, trying to climb against the winds, because there's so many people here who don't want to do that hard work. They don't want to make hard choices. And they don't want to roll their sleeves up and do what you do so well. So I'm really hopeful that we may not get all 12 appropriations done in this process, but by goodness, we're going to get as many as we can, and then we're going to go the next cycle and try to push it back even harder.
That's music to my ears.
We're trying to do that.
We're in the early stages of the shutdown, and shutdowns, I haven't been associated with many, three, I think, The last one, of course, was a 35-day debacle back in 1819, the 1819 timeframe. But they get incrementally worse the longer they go. And now we're talking about threats of potential reductions in force and the like. So is that going to be sufficient to get Senate Democrats to the table?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I just explained in some detail at the press conference here that whomever is president in a scenario like this has an unenviable task, because they've got to sit down when the spigots are turned off effectively and the funds stop flowing. They've got to sit down and determine what are essential versus non-essential services. They have to make the same determinations with policy and personnel, and there's tough choices. And whoever's sitting in the White House will look at that problem set with very different lenses. If you have a conservative Republican, as President Trump is in his administration, they're going to see that set of decisions very differently than Joe Biden's team might have, right? So tough choices. And the irony is, it is Chuck Schumer and the Blue State Democrats that put the president in that position. So when he, by no one's surprise, places a higher priority on some of the rural red states' needs than Chuck Schumer's, you know, situation in New York, that should not be a surprise. They are the ones that put the country in that situation. Now, I would hasten to say, as I did out here in front of the microphones, that no one's taking any pleasure in this. I can tell you the president does not want the government to be shut down. He said that to Chuck Schumer himself in the Oval Office 5 days ago when we were all sitting there together. He pleaded with him not to do this. And Chuck Schumer effectively said, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to do it anyway. And here we are.
You've kept the House home this week. Hasn't been in session. Of course, I know why, and I think it's the smart move. Explain the strategy.
Well, there's some logic to it first. I mean, the House quite literally did our work. We passed that CR to keep the government open over 2 weeks ago, and now we need the Senate to do theirs. If you and I both know, if all of our colleagues are here wandering around with too much idle time, mischief ensues. And so the media is desperate. They circle like vultures in a situation like this, and they're desperate to get a Republican to say something off message or something that would, create another news cycle. So that's a practical concern we have. But the other is that, really, when they decide to turn the lights off at government, it really does affect the legislative branch as well. And there's not much really we can do until Chuck Schumer reopens the government. And I want maximum pressure to be applied for that, because it's the right thing for the people.
There are people out there that are not down in the weeds on rules and this sort of thing that may wonder why, with the Republicans in control of the House and the Senate, and the White House, why we have to have Democrats. But it's a Senate rule. It's a filibuster rule. You got to have 60 over there. And without already one Republican, but adding back three Democrats, we're about five short right now until they vote again. So the Senate rules, it becomes a Senate challenge, does it not?
It does, and Leader Thune's doing a great job. He's trying to meet individually and collectively with members and subsets and leaders. He's trying to talk some sense into those who really don't want to be in a shutdown either. I mean, they've all given passionate speeches over the years, as you know. I'm playing the highlight reel of their own remarks on a video loop in front of the Speaker's office so all the press can see it. I mean, they always said that. And we didn't have a shutdown in the previous 4 years of the Biden administration. Why? Because you and I and Republicans, even when we were in the minority, we voted ultimately to keep the government open because we didn't want to hurt American citizens because of political games. Democrats are doing the opposite. And you and I both know why they're doing it. Chuck Schumer, this is plain and simple. Chuck Schumer's worried he's going to get a challenge by somebody further to the left of him, because they actually have Marxists running for office in New York now, and that he's not going to win his coveted Senate seat back. And that's why he's doing this. He wants to, quote, show a fight against the president and the Republicans, and he's willing to do it even if it hurts our folks back home.
We're about out of time, off subject. And finally, I just want to ask you about the speakership. I remember it well. It was October 25th, 2023, as I recall, about 1:45 in the afternoon, when Mike Johnson got 220 votes, all Republican votes, 220 to nothing, to win the speakership. And boy, you have been through some really choppy waters. I am amazed and quite frankly, consider it somewhat miraculous the way you have been able to lead a very divided conference through some very difficult issues over this time. Mike, how do you do it?
Well, I was 4 inches taller when they elected me speaker. I've been beaten down mercilessly every day since. But we do it. It's three things, really. It's prayer. It's a lot of patience. And it's teamwork. And I'm grateful. And I'm not saying this just because I'm on your podcast. I'm saying that there's a handful of principled people around here, and you're among the top, who keep this operation going. You're the voice of reason. You never get overly excited. People run around here with their hair on fire all the time, and there's about five leaders that I turn to for my example and my solace, and you're one of those, my friend. And I mean that sincerely, and you know I do. But in the modern speakership, it's a real challenge when you have small majorities, small margins, as we do. For about 90 of the first 100 days, we had about literally a one-vote margin. So if anybody gets up in a bad mood, we don't move the agenda. I mean, it's a real challenge. But we pray through that. We try to appeal to everybody's good senses and their better angels. And by God's grace, we've been able to deliver some really important products. And I hope we can keep it going.
You've got a very understanding wife, charming lady, beautiful family that is not getting to see as much of their husband and father as I'm sure they would like. The job is demanding, and I'm not real sure how you muster that strength and energy every single day given all the enormous challenges you're facing, but I just want you to know we count it an honor and a privilege to serve with you and under your leadership here, and we wish you the very best, and we pray that this situation we're in right now will end very soon, and we can get back to the business of the American people.
Well, thank you for saying that. It is not lost on me that we're on the eve now of celebrating our 250th anniversary as a nation, the greatest nation in the history of the world, the one you've served in uniform and now in Congress. It's worthy of saving. And I'm reminded all the time what Reagan said, freedom is not inherited in the bloodstream. It has to be fought for and defended and taught and passed to the next generation so they will know the same liberty, opportunity, and security that we know. And God's given us that chance to do that. I'm grateful that you're willing to come and do this and serve, and I hope you'll do it for much longer. I'll be trying to talk you into that.
Thank you so much.
You got it. Thank you.
Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. As always, I invite your views. This is Congressman Steve Womack with a special edition of Comment from the Capitol.